Hey, did you hear the one about the legal team that became the creative operations leader's best friend? Believe it or not, it's not a joke. Welcome to the Creative Ops Podcast, and thank you for joining me yet again as I continue my never-ending journey of curiosity of all things creative operations. In this episode, we're shattering the myth that legal teams are the nemesis of innovation. So buckle up as I sit down with Betty Louie, General Counsel and Partner at Brand Tech Group, who reveals how their legal team has become a critical catalyst for AI adoption. Betty pulls back the curtain on their green list process, a great example of how legal teams can create safe havens for AI experimentation. By proactively vetting AI tools and setting clear guidelines, Brand Tech Group's legal team has given their creative workforce the green light to embrace AI with full confidence. But we've got more. Betty takes us on a deep dive into the critical role that her legal team is playing in navigating the AI adoption labyrinth. You'll learn how Brand Tech Group's legal team is facilitating open, honest conversations about AI across the organization and with their clients. How they're tackling ethical dilemmas head-on, like bias in AI-generated content, and also joining forces with IT, creative teams, including you, the creative operations leader, and other key players to craft AI strategies. So for you, the creative operations leader, this episode is going to change the way that you view the role of your legal team. And don't forget to tune into the companion questions and actions episode, where I'm going to be giving you some hands-on tactics on how to approach and enroll legal as a co-pilot on your quest to safely experiment with and adopt AI in your creative workflows. So if you're itching to put your AI adoption plans into hyperdrive and need legal writing shotgun as your co-pilot, stay tuned as we hear and learn from Betty Louie of Brand Tech Group. All right. Betty, welcome to the Creative Ops Podcast. So grateful that you're spending some time with us today. I've been looking forward to this conversation because you're general counsel and one of the partners at Brand Tech Group, a digital marketing group. And you've really been at the forefront. And I'd say that Brand Tech has been one of the few organizations I've come across that's really pushing the bounds on accelerating the adoption of AI, both for internal processes as well as for the external client-facing work that you're doing. I think our audience is really going to benefit from hearing about like your earned experience going through this and leading this initiative for Brand Tech Group and all the companies within the group. But before we get to that, the way we start off every episode is, what is your definition of creative operations?
Great question, Nish. Well, first, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. So on to your question on what or who are the creative ops. For me, they are the people who take the brilliant creative idea and turn it into reality. And they're the ones that are able to turn it into reality in accordance with a brand's guidelines, timeline, budget. They're the ones that are able to execute on it. And all those people are creative ops. They are creative in and of themselves, but they're also very operational and they're able to execute.
I love that definition. They're creative themselves, but they're doing it through the lens of operations. So let's move on to the main subject of today's episode, which is my interest in this was sort of spurred by lots of conversations across the community. With a lot of our audience members where they want to move forward in using AI, but often they don't really feel like they've got the confidence or the permission to do so. So let's start off at a very high level. You're general counsel, as I mentioned, at Brand Tech Group. So tell us a little bit about sort of your approach or Brand Tech's approach to, creating a safe sandbox for people on your team to start to experiment and adopt AI?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The way we approach Gen AI or AI tools in general is, number one, we start with the premise that they're here to stay. We ourselves have been operating a Gen AI platform that's been around since 2018. And we start with the premise that you have to acknowledge, not ignore, the strengths of Gen AI tools or AI tools, but you also have to acknowledge their limitations. And you go from there and you think of, you know, let's say from a legal perspective, the way we approached it was, how do we work out a system where it's efficient for everyone involved, but it also encourages play, it encourages innovation, encourages collaboration, but yet at the same time, work within certain guidelines, setting up different guardrails for people, and how do we do it in the most efficient manner? Again, you're just encouraging the innovation and supporting the innovation.
I know at BrandTech, you and your team have got this green light process that you've put in place. And to sort of pick up on some of the things you just mentioned around, like, you know, what Gen AI is good for, what it's acknowledging its limitations. Can you walk us through that green lighting process? It almost sounds like somebody goes, oh, I found this AI tool, and God knows there's so many of them these days.
Like, yes.
I'm pretty sure after we finish her recording, I'll open up my inbox and I'll have newsletters talking about the next 100 AI tools.
Yeah.
So talk us through a little bit of your green lighting process in a way that sort of acknowledges the limitations of AI, puts in place those, I guess, guardrails or precautions that your team is really looking to do, but still at the same time creates that sandbox of like fun and experimentation that you also mentioned.
Yeah, so we started the green list process when we started looking at Gen AI tools of, you know, when ChatGPT was getting really strong and different tools were popping up, like you say, they, you know, 20 pop up every minute nowadays. We heard about different companies going through the process in a reverse way, meaning every single time somebody on the team or somebody within the company wanted to use a tool, they would have to go and submit it to a Gen AI council of some committee that would oversee the process. And as we started working with the tools ourselves, I realized it takes a long time to, you have to invest quite a bit of time to figure out how a tool works, how, you know, how it best works. You have to understand how to prompt it to get what you think you want out of it. And it is investment time that people have. And it's not very efficient to ask people to invest the time to experiment with different tools and come up with the most innovative tools and then have them go to a committee and have the committee say, nope, it doesn't pass our parameters. So we reversed the process and we did the green list process, which is we took it upon ourselves to first review, let's say we probably reviewed in the first batch about 25 different tools. And we reviewed it against a set of different parameters. It's a combination of legal tech, some softer sides of it, probably like 15 different parameters that we review it against. And we put it on, you know, basically this giant metrics of understanding where the tool's strengths are and where the weaknesses are. And then we did, you know, and then we internally weigh it as to whether or not certain parameters would merit it being on the green list of, or Amber, which is more an internal tool that you could use for creative brainstorming, but not for outward facing work, or if it stays on the red list because there were certain red flags that we weren't comfortable with. So we created this list as a metric so that it encouraged people to play with the ones that are on the green list. And therefore, it encourages people to play around with it, invest more time in it, but also to come to us with additional tools that they thought were, you know, worthy of the group looking at and had really innovative features. And we've reviewed about over 60 tools to date. So there's quite a bit. And we put tools into different categories. So we have tools that are in text-to-text, text-to-images, text-to-video, you know, text-to-audio. I mean, there are all these different categories of them. And the premise was there needs to be at least one green-listed tool for each category. And in fact, there's often two or three. And it's a way of ensuring that the creatives have enough bandwidth to encourage, you know, to continue to play and to innovate and to create images that are really cutting edge and interesting, but at the same time have certain parameters, and for legal to have certain visibility as to the type of tools the company's using.
I really like the simplicity of the traffic light metaphor.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like how you think about it. Like, green light are tools that you can use. You could also use it for client-facing work. Yellow or amber are tools that you could use, but for only internally facing. So as you said, for creative ideation and things like that. And red light is, no, don't use these tools. We've looked at them.
And red light is more of, don't waste your time playing with these tools.
Right, because you're not going to be able to use it.
Yeah. And it's really just also just being respectful of the entire team's time, collective time, right? And saying, work with the green tools and we can continue on that path. And that's a good way of, yeah, utilizing people's resources and time.
And you talked about like these 15 or so parameters that you look at. There's some that are related to legal. I imagine those are things like, where's the data stored? Who owns rights to whatever is generated through that particular tool? And then IT is looking at things, probably, I'm going to guess, things like, do they enable single sign-on and things like that in terms of like user access? And then you also mentioned some softer things. What are some of the things in the softer category? Is it around like what data was it trained on?
Yeah, so the softer part I put in the bucket of, we certainly look at the provenance of the tool. We look to see what the tool was, if there was a foundational model that it was built on. And for certain ones, you could tell, they might disclose what it was the tool was built on top of, and certain ones you can't tell, and certain ones are completely built up. So that certainly is one of the categories. I wouldn't put that necessarily under one of the softer evaluations. That's more still a technical evaluation in my view. The softer ones are the provenance of the company, meaning who is behind this company? Do they have a reputation? What's their funding to date? Because like we both have seen, there are so many of these Gen AI tools that are popping up all the time, and they're popping up all over the world. So you need to be sure that there's sufficient funding behind a certain platform so that if anything ever went sideways, they wouldn't just close up shop and leave you holding certain, you know, assets that you didn't really know what to do with. So a lot of it is just doing a bit of diligence and understanding who's behind the company. Are they well-funded? Who are the founders? And just different types of information about it and having some understanding of the journey that you're going to embark with them on.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart approach. My personal opinion is that the vast majority of these AI tools are not going to be around for very long. I just think it's such a fast-moving, complex, competitive environment. And as we've seen, the big players are just constantly releasing new capabilities that are making a lot of these smaller AI players irrelevant almost overnight. So
it's certainly, I mean, it is such a fast moving and interesting sector right now, because like you say, it is very difficult for smaller players to compete with some of the larger players that are in motion. And then at the same time, a lot of the larger tech platforms are investing a huge amount into some of these companies. And then these companies overnight go from a very young startup to something that is a company that's incredibly well-funded with like not millions, but it could be billions. And it's just, you know, you just get some huge players coming in. So you certainly see a lot of the large tech platforms, they're also doing their own diligence as to which is the new up and coming innovative technology in this field. So either they're building it on their own or they're investing very heavily in the new ones. So it definitely, for the ones that aren't getting the investments from these large tech platforms, there's definitely a bit of a struggle if they're not getting additional funding from other sources.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So let's go back to the green list for a moment, if we could. The 15 parameters across legal, tech, some of those like softer things, which sound like they're actually pretty hard things, especially in terms of like provenance and what data was it trained on and things like that, because that might get into like certain ethical implications. Who decides what tools are evaluated? Is this something where anybody across Brand Tech Group can like send an email to you or your legal team and go, hey, I came across this tool. I think it could be very valuable and helpful, either for internal or external use. Can you put it through a review process? So is that the way it sort of starts, or are you and your team or somebody else going and proactively finding like, what are tools out there that are sort of getting a lot of buzz, getting adoption, people are using, that we should just sort of like preemptively evaluate and see if it ends up like green, yellow, or red?
Great question. It's a combination of both. So when we started with a batch of 20, 25 tools. And those were more of a bunch of us looking at this sector, came up with the tools. But, you know, this was about a year ago. So the landscape was much smaller then. Right. And we thought we had a pretty good base as to what they were. And we do now have a form that people fill out online and just say, you know, yes, please evaluate tool X. And, you know, and part of it is they have to explain why it's innovative. Why is this tool doing something that isn't already being done by other tools that are on the green list? But yeah, it doesn't necessarily come to legal in the first instance. It comes to some other people that are more also on the Gen AI operational field, and then it gets a value, you know, and then it comes its way to, let's say, the green listing process. But yes, we do collect that information. So it's pretty organic. It's not, you know, a one-way street. There might be, you know, we would hear of something. We have people referring us to different tools. We're pretty steeped in the space at the moment. So it is, we're hearing things all the time. Someone say, well, check this out. This company looks really good. This looks very interesting. We might be hearing some from the brands themselves, and then certainly from our own team members as to tools that they really like. I don't really look for that form per se anymore. We're really hearing of it so organically because we are so steeped in the space. And then, you know, we'll decide which ones make it to the next batch.
So let's go off on a bit of a tangent, if we could. You said that phrase, steeped in this space. Mm-hmm. And what I've been thinking about since we initially spoke offline in preparation for today's episode is you, and by extension, Brand Tech Group, to me sort of feel like a bit of an anomaly. I think a lot, in a couple of ways, I think a lot of organizations right now are just sort of paralyzed by the fear of the enormity of AI is going to change everything. They're also, in a way, I think, sort of paralyzed by how quickly things are changing, almost like, should I even bother using anything today? Because it seems like something new or better comes along every 24 seconds. And then also, with all due respect to all of my friends and colleagues I've worked with in the legal profession, who are all amazing individuals, legal often gets a rap for they get in the way of progress. But you said we're steeped in it. You've got this green listing process. You and Brand Tech seem different to me in terms of AI adoption. What is different about your organization that you seem to sort of like embrace this and sort of raced out ahead? And you don't have all the answers, but one of the ways in which you're trying to figure out the answers is creating these safe sandboxes, and that's accelerated adoption across all the operating companies in Brand Tech Group.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've heard of, you know, different companies or different agencies being somewhat paralyzed by, I guess, the enormity of Gen AI and the issues and, you know, and the headlines and various things. We haven't been, and that's not part of our founding thought in terms of the Brand Tech Group whatsoever. And in addition, we have a Gen AI platform that's been in use since 2018. You know, so with Pencil and Pencil Pro, that is very much something that is being used and being piloted and being scaled up. There's an enterprise version. So it's something that we're very intimately familiar with and involved with, much less, you know, we are developing it and accelerating it together. What is interesting in terms of the approach of the Brand Tech Group with respect to Gen AI is, I think you hit it right on the head. It's, we assume it's here to stay. We know it's here to stay. This is something that is in use. And will it look different in a year? Most probably. Will it look different in probably 6 months? Most probably. But we're not approaching it from fear in terms of putting the brakes on. In fact, we're doing the opposite. We're leaning in and saying, oh, interesting. Tell me more. What does it do? Let me understand it. Let me see if this is something that's useful. How do we build on top of it? Of how do we work with this and other tools? And that type of DNA, you will really see across the company. And it's not just legal or different departments. It's every single facet of it takes that approach. And we're really open to talk to different brands about this, different brands about what we're seeing, how we're approaching it, how they're approaching it. And it's super interesting conversation because the Gen AI space is so new in many ways, or maybe because it's moving so quickly. And you really get to see, well, this is where I see some of the risk, or do you see the risk over here? Or another brand might say, you know what, I have other requirements that I need to go past their own internal green list. So it becomes a very open, collaborative discussion as to where the risks are and where the pros are, where the benefits are. So once you embark on that approach, you know, the rest just follows along, and legal is definitely very much a part of that process.
I hope that anyone's listening here, that they're forwarding this episode to their own legal teams and going like, we can work together to create our own green list to sort of get past that paralysis and start to have more confidence around the way we're playing with and experimenting with and adopting these various AI tools. You mentioned that you're meeting with like different brands. There, I assume it's the clients that Brand Tech Group companies are working with. When you're meeting with them, are you sharing your own green list? Is there transparency around here's the tools that we're using, here's how we're using it?
So in terms of brands, when I say brands, absolutely. It's the clients of the Brand Tech Group or any of the group companies, or even any potential clients. It's we are talking about our process of, you know, which tools we're using, what tools they're comfortable with. Oftentimes it starts with discussion on Pencil Pro and all of its benefits and, you know, certain parameters where we have built into Pencil Pro that would ensure that it's well ahead of even the rest of the pact in the green list. And it is fairly transparent in terms of working with the brands as to what's on our green list. We can't tell them whether it should be green on their list, but we certainly tell them what's how we adopt it, right? Because every single brand, every single company will have their own risk appetite. But we could tell them the parameters that we've looked at, you know, how we evaluated a certain tool. And certainly it's a very open discussion about that. And then again, every single brand might have additional aspects to it. There might be a security team. There might be an IT team that might have other parameters. But it is very open, and it's very open in terms of the terms we're looking at or terms that we've negotiated with different platforms. So it's a fairly transparent discussion. Yeah.
So if I'm one of your clients and you're sharing your green list with me and the parameters, one of the questions I'm probably going to be asking is, you've got these 15 parameters, legal looks at some things, IT looks at some things, and then there's that sort of like the softer bucket, as you called it. What comes out of all the inputs? Is it like, is it a numerical score, or is it ultimately like you look at all the inputs from IT, your legal team in that softer bucket, and then you make the call on, yes, this gets on the list, either red, amber, or green, or is it actually, is there a formula behind it?
There isn't a formula. We're not as formulaic in it. There are certain ones that are pretty non-negotiable in our point of view. Basically, once we get a certain batch and we review it, and it gets reviewed, then a few of us come together, not that many, and we basically say, we don't need a number on it. We say, okay, this, okay, I think green, this, amber, this, red. By now, we've looked at so many tools that some of it is instinctive. Once you start seeing how the terms play out, you get a pretty good sense of it. And that discussion doesn't need to be super long.
And how did you come up with the list of the 15 parameters? Was that based on, like, you know, the way you've evaluated technologies in the past? Is there something sort of very specific and unique to these AI tools that resulted in some of these parameters?
I mean, some of it is just how you look at AI tools in general. And certainly there's a lot of it with respect to Gen AI. You look to see indemnification because the Gen AI space is moving so quickly in this regard. So it's a combination. I think some of it is just what any lawyer would look at when they're looking at evaluating tools for a company to use. And then the Gen AI aspect is certainly on top of it. You know, understanding the inputs, who owns the inputs, who owns the outputs. That's very Gen AI specific, right? Because the output is the magic right now. It's more than what people had imagined, and how quickly and how beautiful the images can be in 1 second. And if you don't like it, you generate another image and you generate other ones. So it's a combination. And certainly, you know, we're not tied to these parameters. There could be additional ones over time. And certainly with the advance of video, like video is getting on Gen AI is getting right, really good and really quickly right now. So there could be a whole bunch of other categories. And again, I think the key is we're not rigid and we're not tied to this is the way it will be. We're actually very, very relaxed about it. We evaluate it. We're fairly nimble on it. And, you know, if there are more video type tools and we're looking at it and more innovation, there could be other categories that we have to evaluate. And we're not protective of any of these. And actually, you know, when I talk to brands or when we talk to brands about their own green listing process, it's super exciting when you hear of different categories. Like if you hear of different categories, or if you hear, oh, our IT department or our security department requires certain things, it's actually super interesting from my perspective, at least, because you hear different inputs and you hear, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't appreciated that angle. So I think that's a really important quality to have with respect to Gen AI, whether you're in legal or any other aspect. It's evolving so quickly that you really can't be tied to, you know, your current position. You really have to just keep staying open and open to discussions and just talking and reviewing different, you know, what's out in the market and really playing with the tools. There's no substitute for really working with the tools by yourself. And even for us on the legal team, we're always checking them out. I mean, it's impossible to evaluate any of the Gen AI tools without really understanding what they do. How do they work? How can you work with them? How can you work with them with other tools? That really allows you to understand the whole process.
One of the things that's like coming through for me crystal clear, and hopefully for the listener as well, is just the collaborative approach that you take both internally and externally with your clients. And there's this constant state of learning and updating. And I think that aligns really well with just how quickly, as we've said, this whole space is moving and evolving. And you've got a few dozen tools on this list now. Are you having to go back and sort of reevaluate these tools on a set cadence? Because maybe their terms and conditions have been updated or their capabilities are changing. And again, everything is moving so quickly. So has that changed the way you and your team need to operate?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, the terms are changing pretty often. So even on tools that we evaluated of just recently, there was a tool that we had put on the red list and somebody had said, hey, I think they just came out with new terms. And we looked at the terms and We're like, okay, it can be green now. So the sector has changed a lot since we've been looking at it for the last year. We were one of the early people really evaluating the terms and conditions of a whole bunch of different Gen AI tools. And now you see that there is more of, especially at the enterprise level, certain terms that you expect to see. And if you don't see it right away in a short period of time, you really see the terms changing and becoming, they're more user-friendly, they're more permissive, they give better protection for the user. So you certainly see the evolution of that. But with respect to our green list, yeah, absolutely. It's not a static green list. So we it's not just we review one and done. We do go back and we do have to change if necessary, if they get updated. It is incumbent upon us to stay abreast of that.
And again, it's a reflection of how quickly things are moving. And I think very often it's we negotiated the contract, we got all the terms and conditions we needed with the technology vendor, but most technologies pre-Gen AI age were sort of static, right? Like they didn't really change all that much or all that frequently. And we're just living in a different world. And it sounds like through your engagement with a lot of these Gen AI tool vendors, they're also listening to forward-thinking legal practitioners like yourself and going, here's how we need to think about updating our terms for somebody like Brand Tech Group to move us from the red list to the yellow list or the yellow list to the green list as well.
You definitely see they are much more open to discussions and different things. At the same time, you also see that for Gen AI tools in the past year, I've also seen how they've moved into before they were much more open to any type of discussion. It didn't matter how much you were purchasing from them. And then soon they moved into tiers, meaning if you purchased a certain amount, you got certain types of terms. If as you moved up the ranks into enterprise terms, you got much better terms. So they definitely moved into a type of tier system as to what do they offer in exchange for dollars, but then also in exchange for terms. So the higher you are up in terms of enterprise level, the better the terms are. Without negotiation, they give you better terms. So I've seen how the industry has also matured into a much more open discussion, them being open to discuss with anybody to a tiered system. Just as a way of background, part of our Gen AI policy is we also have a very robust do's and don'ts. So that is how people also operate Gen AI tools. So it's not just green list and you're free to go. There are certain things that are do's and don'ts that, people really need to adhere to. And that's a super important practical approach that we really look for the team members to look at. So it's not just look at the green list and you're fine to do everything or whatever you want with the green list, but you operate the green list in conjunction with the do's and don'ts.
You're taking us exactly where I wanted to go next. So let's talk a bit more about the do's and don'ts, because really what I want the audience to get out of this is whether they themselves or they go and talk to their legal team is to say, let's work together and sort of come up with a process for how we confidently bring AI at a quicker pace into our organizations and be able to move forward. So when you talk about the do's and don'ts, who comes up with those do's and don'ts? Is it the legal team? Is it the people that are actually using the tools, like the creative directors?
It's a team effort. It's a team effort. Legal certainly leads it, but it's a creative effort. It's a collaborative effort. So there are creatives involved. There are some of the technical sides involved, but it's a list. Like, for example, don't put in any confidential information. Don't put in any sensitive information. That's certainly driven by legal, but that's also part of the creative process of making sure that you are sensitive and super sensitive of a brand's confidential information and sensitive information of, to protect against not getting infringing work. But it's also a practical matter is don't put in what one of my colleagues says is don't put in pronouns. Like, for example, if you put in, give me an image of Wonder Woman, you're going to get an image that is going to be infringing on someone's copyright because you're going to get Wonder Woman. You know, but a creative who is very aware of the Gen AI space also wouldn't do that because it would be a waste of his or her time. Because why would you want to put something like that in and get an output that you could not use? So it doesn't need to be driven by legal, but it's a collaborative process. But you also want to make sure that certain guardrails are in place. That at the same time, for the ones that are using the Gen AI tools a lot, they would also, and that's part of the prompt engineering, they would also know how to do certain things so that they could get the better output and output that they could really work with and use, as opposed to, this is completely infringing and I'm not even going to do this.
I love that Wonder Woman example because I 100% agree with you. So let's say a tool like Midjourney that I think most people have probably heard about and probably used. I'm going to guess it's somewhere on the list. I'm going to guess it's on the Amber list. Like you could use it for creative ideation and things like that. But it's almost like if you're not careful with your prompts or you're not using like the private feature in Midjourney, that could be used for like, you know, a competitor finding out something. So for example, let's say Acme Inc. is coming out with a new product or a new service or a new slogan or something like that. If you start to incorporate those as part of your prompts in Midjourney and you're not using the private feature, that can be monitored because it's all on a public Discord server. And all of a sudden somebody might go, oh, Acme Inc. is about to launch this new product. We're their competitor. And so I think the do's and don'ts, I really like that because that probably then sort of back ends into how are teams and individuals trained on using these tools as well, I imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, if you're working with a brand, it is incumbent upon you that you keep any of the brand's private information and super sensitive information completely confidential and you keep it safe. So it's absolutely important that the do's and don'ts are adhered to and there are certain guardrails in place and that the brands have confidence that your team is confident and comfortable to move in that space without tripping up on, you know, making silly errors or something like that, that have huge ramifications. So it is really important that that type of, you know, the do's and don'ts move from the paper of a do's and don'ts to a practical reality of how they should be used.
I like to talk a little bit about like maybe digging more into some of the softer things. We've seen a lot of stories in the media over the last year around how certain tools, the outputs they generate. I saw this YouTube video from South by Southwest from just a couple of weeks ago. And this one individual gave some examples of they're putting in prompts into one of the text to image tools. And the prompt was CEO, and the outputs were overwhelmingly older white men. And then they followed it up with a prompt for like CEO of a company that makes tampons, a product that only women would use. And it still came up with like predominantly men as the output. So how do you sort of think about evaluating the outputs these tools are generating, and then how deeply do you sort of look at or ask about like the data that the model was trained on?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the data, you know, and that's certainly a lot of headline news nowadays in terms of the, you know, inherent bias in sort of some of the original training models. I think I shared with you before when I started playing with the tools, I also looked to see, give me a picture of a, you know, a woman CEO or a businesswoman or an Asian businesswoman. And I had gotten pictures of like women with like a family, like running or something. It was like, it was a really strange image because I was expecting a headshot. Whereas if you don't put in a gender, you would get a headshot of a male, right? So the combination of putting in a woman and Asian, you get more of a family setting, even though it's supposed to be in a work environment. And then, or if you do another iteration of it, I got headshots of very young women professionals. So it was a totally professional headshot, but it was of young women that were starting out in their careers, let's say in their early 20s. So it was interesting because it was not able to acknowledge women professionals of my age of without being with, you know, in a family setting. It wasn't inherently generating that image. I'm sure now over time it's gotten a bit better because people have been much more mindful. But these images that come out is based on images that they train on. So if you're not getting a plethora of Asian women over a certain age with professional headshots, it's not coming up and generating those intrinsically when you ask for the output. You know, at Brand Tech Group, we have a tool that's called Bias Breaker, where it's a tool that can be used together with Pencil, and it's something that you can turn on. It's not systemic, so it's not like it's automatically on. It's something that you can turn on, and it does adjust for some of these, let's say, inherent biases that might be in training models and allows you to look at it in a different lens. So it's able to, you're able to work with the output in a, let's say, more diverse way. So this is something that we at Brand Tech, we are intimately very close to in terms of understanding the training and also generating images that might be more diverse and less diverse, but also within your control as to how to be mindful of it. And that's why it wasn't built in on a systemic level. It's not that, you know, it's something, it's a tool that you can control. You can turn on, you can turn off.
One of the things I've found fascinating about these incidents that have happened where people are like, I just can't get it to output something that is relevant to me or relevant to the client, whether that's an external client or just if you're an individual brand, like relevant to us, is I often think about a picture says 1,000 words and the discussions it leads to, because I think very often we're just sort of blind to these biases that are inherent in a lot of the systems in our world. We've often heard these stories about mortgage processing applications that have long used machine learning and AI, where with hindsight, they've been able to see there's, because of the data it's trained on, there's bias that is then carried through to who gets approved and who doesn't get approved, what interest rate do they get. But it's often hard to quote unquote see that, because it's almost hidden. What I think one of the sort of silver linings of these text-to-image tools that are just, again, put in, generate image as CEO, and you're predominantly going to get like a white male image that comes out of it, is that it shows you right on the screen like bias. And it's not like on-purpose bias. It's just, this is the data I was trained on. And that data is sort of a reflection of the world that was and is, and not necessarily a reflection of the world that we want to live in.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's definitely brought the discussion of inherent bias or unconscious bias to the forefront, because when you see these images generated over and over again, and it's hitting a certain theme, it's hard to deny it, right? Because the models themselves are just portraying what it was trained on, not other aspects of it. And that's why if you build in other aspects that will help break the bias or analyze the bias, it helps tip the scale and you get different types of images. Yeah.
Right. Okay, just a couple of other areas I want to touch on before we wrap up today. One is, once a tool ends up on the list, or let's say even taken off the list or it changes what color it's at, how do you communicate that across the organization? Is it just simply an email goes out to everybody across Brand Tech Group, or is there some sort of structure or process around that?
Yeah, it's more organic. It's not an email because, again, the list is pretty, it moves pretty quickly. Yeah. And everybody's just inundated with a million emails nowadays. It's just a list that is part of our Gen AI policy, and it stays up on a portal after it's launched. And then somebody can go and look to see where they are. If they're looking at a certain tool, they can just look it up and see where the tool is on our list. So it's actually pretty transparent.
Got it. And I think that's part of moving faster, right? Which is one of the core principles that you and the Brand Tech Group have adopted when it comes to AI. It's here and we're going to move quickly. And there's a list. Anybody, any of the thousands of people across Brand Tech Group could go like, yeah, I want to start using AI. Let me go and see what tools are available. And it clearly lays out the do's and don'ts of any one of those individual tools. And I know because we interviewed Michelle Vincent from the CEO of MoFilm, one of the Brand Tech Group companies, I think way back on episode 2. And they've got this like beautiful ethos of like open and transparent experimentation, where I'm guessing they're going to the list going, oh, okay, here's this tool. Let's start to experiment with it with maybe a handful of people. And then they're just sharing that across MoFilm. And that's had so many positive effects in terms of like people not being scared of it, seeing how it's going to help them. And you've even used language through our conversation today. You've kept calling it like, these are just tools. And that's in stark contrast to a lot of organizations I speak to where the language and the narrative is around these things are coming in to replace us. But you and Brand Tech Group sort of talk about it as these are tools that we're going to use and leverage to unlock the immense creativity that we have across the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We don't see it as, oh gosh, this is so threatening. We see it as these are tools and look at all the cool things that they can do. And what more can we do on top of these or with these tools? What more, what other angles can we add on to it? You know, human in the loop is very much a part of Gen AI tools, and it's very much a part of how we operate. And I think the other good part of a green list and an organization having a lot of transparency and dialogue and collaboration is it doesn't become incumbent on one group of people to figure out what are the best tools, because we're getting all the feedback from across the company and from outsiders as to what tools to analyze. Is there might be tools that somebody, let's say, for example, in the MoFilm team might not have thought about, but when they saw it on the green list and they saw what the tool, what category the tool fell in or what it can do, they're like, oh, let me play around with this and let me see what it can do. So it really encourages this type of collaboration because you get the input from all your team members, but much larger than your immediate team members just across the company to see what type of tools that are out there and how interesting they are. So it really is a very innovative approach.
I love how you're able to do that right across Brand Tech Group. You're doing that in concert with your clients as well. They're learning from you. You're learning from them. And it just creates this exponential component to it.
Absolutely.
Like adoption.
Absolutely. And they do sometimes ask, have you worked with this tool? What do you think? Where are you seeing this? Where do you see issues with this? Are you getting requests for this? So it really is a safe, it's a safe environment where people talk about Gen AI and what we are seeing. So it's not just about tools, but about features or what are some of the cutting edge things we're hearing. And those are super interesting conversations.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. And I know for anyone listening, they might be going, well, we're not, you know, we don't have multiple companies or things like that. We're just a single brand. But even within a single brand, it sort of further reinforces the idea of in your organization, adoption of AI should be a team sport, not just in terms of evaluating technologies, but also how are different functional groups using AI and what are they learning from it? And what's marketing doing? What's creative doing? What's sales doing? What's legal doing? I'm sure your own team is starting to experiment with certain tools as well. So the final thing I want to dig into, if we could, is let's imagine you're sitting around the table with 9 legal peers from different organizations, and they're going, Betty, you and Brand Tech Group have raced out ahead. We've learned so much, you know, just from the simple yet impactful way in which you've approached evaluating tools and creating this green list process, an asset for the entire organization to benefit from. What are the things that are sort of top of mind for you in terms of like risks that you see moving ahead?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are definitely a lot of things that are always kind of on my ticker to watch for, especially in this space. You know, the copyright lawsuits that are going around the US right now, it's something that we do keep an eye on. And we are mindful of if there are any developments in it and kind of what some of the arguments are, if there are novel arguments about it. That's something that we watch for. But in terms of things that are more on my mind right now, it's really understanding, you know, I think videos that are coming out with Gen AI is getting very interesting, but very, very complicated at the same time. For example, recent questions came up about synthetic humans in videos. So it's like you start getting the confluence of legal, ethics, cultural, with creative all in one. So it's these really interesting ideas, because as the technology gets exponentially stronger, the legal issues get more layered. That's something that I watch for and that I, you know, I'm trying to stay abreast on and really understanding what's the best way to roll it out, or what's the best way and how to stay, you know, in tandem with the technology that's developing. Another thing that I think is super interesting that's going on is that the brands themselves are really leaning into Gen AI in the sense that they're saying, we have our own library and we have our own voice and we have our own images, and we want to bring that to the table. It's like you bring your own model. They have their own way of approaching things, and they want to use that in conjunction with existing Gen AI tools. And that's super interesting as to making sure that we're able to really leverage that alongside of the brands.
So is that almost like they're going to use their brand assets, which is data, to train a model?
It can be. It can be to use their own model. Yeah. So that the images are in their voice, in their names, in their assets that they've used before.
Yeah. And I know you've mentioned Pencil, which is a very fascinating company to me. They've got their own AI tool. They build their own AI tool. I think every brand is going to end up building their own AI tools, like starting with, we're going to use our own data and assets to fine tune a model to output something that sort of looks and feels and acts like us. And your first point about, as we're starting to see like these synthetic humans and some of these other capabilities come in, and you talked about like culture and what are the ethical implications. That's where I think, again, it's going to be very fascinating for organizations and for the role legal will play, because that's going to start to get into some very like ambiguous areas, because we're going to be able to use these tools to do things we couldn't do yesterday, to move faster, to do more. It's going to have implications for our brand, our culture, our business models, for sure. So I think legal's job when it comes to Gen AI is just getting started. This really is a team sport, and legal needs to be part of these conversations. You and your team and BrandTech Group are a great example of this. They're enablers of all this, because if you think it's complicated today, we haven't seen anything yet. It's about to get exponentially more complex in terms of the questions, the opportunities, and the challenges we're all going to have to face as individual brands.
Yeah, you summed it up perfectly. It's the intersection of all these different aspects coming together, and it will continue to come together in a more complicated manner, that it doesn't just involve legal, but legal is certainly a big part of it. That makes it very interesting. And it is important for people to get involved sooner rather than later, because it will only get more complicated.
So let's go back to that table with your 9 legal peers from different organizations. What are you telling them about why they should be excited about this time and this opportunity? Why are you excited about all this? Your excitement has come through in every one of our conversations. What gets you going about all this?
It's super exciting. I mean, I don't to me, it's just intrinsically exciting, right? It's seeing all this magic before your eyes. And to imagine that this magic that's happening before your eyes is only, you know, level 1.0, whereas in your whatever you're seeing, you're, all you say is, wow, wow, wow. That to me is intrinsically super exciting. And I think, you know, the way I approach it for the legal teams, you know, with friends and with brands themselves is it's fantastic for legal to get involved, because in the marketing industry, something that maybe legal in the past wasn't necessarily in the forefront of evaluating different types of things. You might see, let's say, an image or an output that a team put together, and you might see it at the last minute before it gets approved to go out to a client. Whereas now you're really part of the process altogether. You're not creating the images in that mix, but you're part of the initial process as to understanding the tools that are being used and what can be used. And you're certainly part of the dialogue as to how things are built, how the creatives can use the tools in a safer way. And then you get to see certain outputs along the way. And it certainly brings the team closer together on the collaborative side. I think Gen AI, go back to our original premise, is we look and we acknowledge the strengths of Gen AI tools, and we also acknowledge their limitations. And we know that the tools are here to stay, so that we really lean into it. We don't ignore it, or we don't try to step away from it.
So as we're wrapping up, two meta thoughts like occur to me. One is the softer side of, as you've said throughout today's episode, it's here, we're embracing it, and we're really approaching it as these are tools and enablers of creativity. They're not replacements. Will it change what we do, the way we do it, and have other implications? Yes, but it's here. Let's embrace it and let's leverage it to our benefit, to our clients' benefit. And then two is just some very simple and practical approaches to, like, how do we just start to evaluate these things? You've made it a team sport at Brand Tech Group, both in terms of evaluation and implementation, and that's allowing you to move faster. And I've talked to other people across Brand Tech Group, and this isn't just pontification. This is true. People on the ground, in the trenches, doing the work, they're benefiting from this. And they're able to move forward with confidence, where they're able to move forward with fun and excitement, because it's being done in an open, transparent way. And they're embracing the change because it's going to happen. So you may as well just do it with the eyes wide open sort of way.
And, you know, it's meant to really be a collaborative effort, so that whatever tool somebody's using, they feel like they have the support of the company on it.
Yeah. Well, Betty, thank you so much. I know this is going to be incredibly valuable to the listener. And again, I'd encourage them to forward it on to their own legal departments. And you might end up getting a bunch of pings on LinkedIn afterwards going, tell us more about your evaluation process.
Happy to do so.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Nish. This has been super, super interesting.
Awesome. That's a wrap for today's episode. Remember to please do three things. Number one, head over to creativeops.fm and sign up for that companion newsletter. Number two, whatever your favorite podcast player is, please hit subscribe. Search for Creative Ops, all one word, Creative Ops Podcast. Make sure you don't miss the next episode. And remember, number three, this isn't just my journey of curiosity. This is our journey of curiosity about all things Creative Ops. So if you've got a question or maybe a different perspective about what you heard today, or maybe you just want to share something that you're curious about, drop me a line at nish@creativeops.fm. Thanks so much, and I look forward to catching you at the Creative Ops Water Cooler for next week's episode.